You know what I'm going to ask you next, right? And invariably, that ends up bringing up vaccines.
Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. I'm your host, Keith Reynolds, and on behalf of the whole team, I hope you had a lovely turkey day. This episode, we're featuring a conversation between Medical Economics Assistant Editor Austin Luttrell and Dr. Jay Lee. He's on the board of directors of the AAFP, and he's also the medical director at Integrated Health Partners of Southern California. They'll be discussing how to overcome vaccine hesitancy in patients.
So I guess, could you just start off by just providing just a general overview of the CDC's latest recommendations on COVID-19 and pneumococcal vaccines and what that means for physicians?
Yeah, absolutely. So happy to speak to that. So a couple things. One is around COVID vaccines, the prevailing recommendations coming out of the public health emergency were to have a once a year booster after every fall, similar to what we might get for the flu vaccine. However, the more recent recommendations that for certain groups that may be at higher risk for severe COVID, that there be actually a second shot 6 months after that first booster shot in the fall. And I think the science is evolving on this, but I think it's become pretty clear that we're starting to get in a bit of a seasonal pattern. And so the fall recommendation made sense right out of the gate from the moment that we left the public health emergency. And I think the data is continuing to show that those who are getting hospitalized and having severe cases of COVID tend to be those who have chronic illnesses, and typically those over the age of 50 who have one or multiple chronic conditions. As far as pneumococcal vaccine goes, you know, that's also evolved thanks to science and data. And a lot of the biggest change that we're seeing in the current recommendation is a reduction in the age at which patients might receive that pneumococcal vaccine. Historically, we recommended, actually, it used to be one pneumococcal vaccine. There's actually now two pneumococcal vaccines that could be given for people over the age of 65. The new recommendation is that that age range be brought down to the age of 50. And again, a lot of that was also data-driven based on hospitalizations and people who are most likely to get severe pneumonia that might put them in the hospital or worse, take their life.
I do kind of touched on it a bit there, but as respiratory illness season ramps up, how important is it for physicians to encourage vaccinations against the flu, COVID-19, pneumococcal infections simultaneously? And what strategies do you know that are really effective there?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I think my patients are well attuned to what I maybe recommend once we get past Labor Day. And so I'll ask them very bluntly, you know what I'm going to ask you next, right? And invariably, that ends up bringing up vaccines, which is one of those important domains that we talk about with patients when they do come in. I think it's about being consistent with asking. And then I think, you know, I would say there's still a lot of patients who will say yes, and they'll roll up their sleeves and they'll get it done. There are, over the course of my 20 plus years of doing this, there have been a growing number of people who have additional questions. And one of my ways of sort of approaching that is taking a very careful listen as to what it is that they are concerned about, and then asking them actually a set of questions about what's important to them. And so sometimes what I'll uncover from that is that, you know, it's really important to them that they're able to see their elderly relative or somebody who's in the hospital or someone that might be sick. And so oftentimes what I'll do is I'll tie that desire to be connected with the people in their life and their loved ones with, hey, this is not just for you, but it's also for those folks in your life. And would you be open to having that conversation? And then I think, being sort of persistently and pleasantly cajoling, it can help a lot. It's that relationship. It's not like I'm some random doctor that's coming up and just saying that, hey, you need to have this done. It's based in trust and it's based in a relationship. And I think it's really important for patients to understand that there's a tremendous amount of value in having that ongoing relationship with your trusted family physician. And they're there to help you sort through all of the potential misinformation that's out there. Because our job is to really make sure that we are doing that risk-benefit analysis for you as a patient, and that we're taking into account the things that are important to you.
Great. How has the way that physicians should approach the vaccine conversation changed in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, I alluded to this a bit earlier, but back 20 years ago, I'd have a small percentage of patients who would say no. And this was with regards to any vaccination, really. And then I think because of misinformation, it's just made it harder to navigate. And I think a lot of it is that sometimes patients will come to you with information that they've gathered from sources. And so I'll often have a conversation about what source did you get that information from? And kind of ask a series of questions, not to debunk or embarrass the patient, but really just to kind of poke holes in the argument, right? And then I think then it's turning that conversation into, well, I've taken care of you for 15 years. I really care about your health, and we've been through a lot together, and we've really I've been able to help you with your diabetes. I've been able to help you with your hypertension. Remember, you got your colonoscopy. And kind of building that rapport and reminding the patient that we're really there for their health and their well-being. And even then I may not be 100% successful, but at least we've had that conversation. And then I actually then open the door for further conversation if they say no. So I know you didn't say yes this time, but is there an opportunity for us to revisit this the next time I see you? Or maybe I can have my nurse reach out to you, in a week, and we can and revisit that, because right now October and November is scientifically the best time for you to get your vaccine, for these seasonal respiratory illness vaccines.
Oh, you say you're a practice leader or administrator? We've got just the thing. Our sister site, physicianspractice.com, your one-stop shop for all the expert tips and tricks that will get your practice really humming. Again, that's physicianspractice.com.
You talked about it there, I guess, with the kind of building rapport and reminding them that you're not some random doctor, you are their physician. But do you have any other strategies that physicians could employ to kind of address vaccine hesitancy or misinformation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the old days of doctors kind of taking maybe a more authoritarian or authoritative approach as the holders of information, that era is gone because we've got the internet now. And I think really a big piece of that is working with a patient to help them to try to better understand how it is that they got to the conclusion that they got to. And then for us as health professionals to say, well, here's what the science actually says. Again, not to debunk or to embarrass them, but really to create that dialogue. Because when you have that back and forth dialogue, that's the opportunity for us to create change, and the opportunity for patients to begin to think more critically about the actual science that's out there behind this. And yes, there are risks to anything that we do in healthcare, but ultimately our job as physicians is to help patients weigh the risks and benefits. And what we know from vaccines and the decades of vaccine data is that far and away, it's one of the most effective public health measures for getting patients to prevent having severe illness or disease. And because we've done such a good job with vaccination over the last century, I think people often forget what it was like before we had vaccines. And I'm old enough to know that there are things that I experienced as a physician on the treating side that were terrible to see, things like respiratory syncytial virus or RSV, and how amazing it's been that we've kind of turned the corner on that and gotten so much better at preventing severe illness for those who are vulnerable.
Great. So this is my last one, and then I'm just gonna kind of wrap up after that. But there are a lot of different options nowadays for patients when it comes to getting their vaccines. Why do you think that it is important for family practices to continue to offer these services? I mean, kind of in terms of like a patient-physician relationship.
Yeah, I think when at all possible, if a patient's able to get their vaccine at their family physician's office, I would highly recommend it because for a couple of reasons. One is they can have that conversation with you about the risk. There may be other things, depending on your age and your gender and your family history, that you're going to need to have addressed anyway. So, it's kind of a one-stop shop to be able to come in and to have that conversation and have a review of your record to see what things may be missing. I also think there's a sense of just sort of that connection to a doctor who and a team around that doctor who's there to sort of help you navigate your own health concerns and your own health issues. That's the place that I know that I get the most joy out of caring for patients and answering questions. But B, I know that my patients often come back and view us as that sort of first touch point when questions do arise. It gets very confusing very fast when you're on the internet. And unless you're absolutely certain that you're going to get a vaccine, sometimes going to a retail pharmacy or going to another location is probably not going to be the best option for you because they may not take the time to answer the questions in the way that you might have in the doctor's office.
Great. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that I didn't ask you that you think is important for our audience of physicians to know about?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is continuing to encourage patients to have that usual source of care. I think what we know is that when patients do have a usual source of care, that really helps with getting your care gaps closed, getting your vaccines done, getting your cancer screening done. And when you're not connected to a medical home or a team that's there to kind of help guide you through that, oftentimes that care can be very fragmented. And although we're in a very digital world, there's something beautiful and classic and about that analog relationship that you might have with your doctor, even if it's facilitated by digital platforms. In the end, it is that human connection that makes us all healthier and all feel a lot more complete.
Absolutely. Well, great. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, 100%. And thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, that was Medical Economics Assistant Editor Austin Luttrell and Dr. Jay Lee of the AAFP. My name is Keith Reynolds, and on behalf of the whole Medical Economics team, I'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, if you'd like a digest of the best stories Medical Economics publishes delivered straight to your email 6 days a week, subscribe to our newsletter at medicaleconomics.com. Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Patient Care Online are all members of the MGH Life Sciences family. Thank you.